Well, I always tell my students, follow your bliss.
Welcome, babies. Welcome to Blissed the Podcast. I'm your host, Patch Drury. I have just returned from Louisville. I drove there in the Mobile Blissed Podcast Mobile, which is what I call my car, and I took my Mobile Blissed podcasting gear, which is what I call my microphones, and I did an episode of Blissed the Podcast, which is what I call this podcast, and I interviewed Nick Taylor. Nick is a chef. He was a friend of mine. He's been a friend of mine for a couple of years. I first met him a few years ago. I was recording video for a food truck competition here in Lexington, and he was one of the competitors. He had this kind of mobile tent kitchen galley set up, and his food was the best food that I had that day. I can't remember all the specifics of the dish, but it was a brisket on a beet flavored pancake, and there was something else. There was some other part of it that I really thought was good, and I can't remember what it was, but it was really great food. And Nick was super nice, and we had a lot of the same friends, and some people just kind of knew him around Lexington. And so we've been friends for a little while. And when I announced I was doing this podcast, and I put out a call for potential interviewees, people who were following their bliss, Nick responded. And Nick was somebody I had actually thought of before, because he, if you follow him on Facebook or Instagram or any of that stuff, he is really into cooking. He loves to cook. It is clearly his bliss. And he reached out to me because in the way I described the show, he thought it would be meaningful that he, like me, used to work at a church. He used to be in ministry of some kind, and he left that life to pursue life as a chef. And so I did not know that. I was completely surprised by that. So already it was an interesting story to me, and I thought, well, this would probably be something good. We can probably make a good podcast out of this. So I drove to Louisville, where Nick lives, with his girlfriend Rachel and their dog Penny, and I sat down with him at his kitchen table, and we had a nice little chat about his life originally in ministry and why he left that and how he started cooking and all the one of the best parts of the story is he talks about all of the moving around that he's done throughout his life, and the one thing that followed him everywhere he went that was a constant source of support was cooking. He has always cooked since he was a little kid, helping his mother out. He talked about how he used to leave kickball with his friends or whatever to go help his mother cook, and it was a thing he was happy about. He was glad to do that. And so cooking has been a part of his life for a long time. It is clearly his bliss, and we talk about that, and it's a really nice conversation. So really glad to have Nick on the show today, and I don't like to make these beginning parts too long, so let's get right to the interview. This is my interview with Nick Taylor.
I'm not even sure totally what we're talking about. If we're going to talk about some of the church thing,
I would like to.
If we're going to talk about that, I'll be honest with you, and I haven't talked about that in about 8 years.
Okay.
Which kind of like reaching out to you and letting you know these things was even a little
felt a little weird.
Yeah, but just because like I'm letting somewhat of a stranger know this part of my past, but yeah. I think it's worth hearing.
Yeah. Well, I think it's meaningful to the conversation, especially.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially as far into it as I went. And by like far into it, I don't mean to sound like, you know, I got to OT8, you know, like the levels of the cult or something like that. Yeah. It's just like how much I believed.
Yeah.
How much I was invested and how ready I was to spend my life doing this.
Yeah.
And then it all kind of came whoosh, to a quick end.
I know that feeling, and that's so. We'll start there. Let's just start there. Is that I was surprised to find out that we had something in common, and that we both used to work at churches, and we're both in ministry. So tell me the story of that.
Okay, so I grew up in the Christian Church, Church of Christ, instrumentalist Church of Christ.
Okay.
In high school, I moved to a non-instrumental Church of Christ. If you're familiar with that.
Yes.
It's like, you know, church with no rock and roll. I basically what happened was in 2007, I was working in restaurants. I was going to Marshall University, studying computer science, and was just unhappy. I was unhappy with my job. I was unhappy with my relationships. I was just overall searching for something to make my life a little better. So I started on my own doing homeless outreach in my neighborhood, just around Huntington, where I'm from, Huntington, West Virginia.
To give yourself some kind of purpose.
To see like what I wanted to do, you know, see what how I could help, you know.
Sure.
So I started doing that, and like I'd been out of church for several years at this point. I think like 2003 was the last time I'd walked into a church door. Still had some faith, you know, but then I started reading, books by like Shane Claiborne, you know, like Irresistible Revolution and
just like progressive hippie Christianity.
Like Tony Campolo, know, like that. And, I started realizing that, there was a need that, oh man, this is so difficult to like word all of it. I believed that what Christ had to say about the poor, about widows, about orphans, was something that needed to be implicated in today, but was not being done by the church. And I started like not only like reaching out in my own neighborhood to homeless people that I would just come across on my way to work, but it got so much that I would spend my entire days off down on the river with the homeless of my hometown. And as that grew, I went back to part-time work and just continued to do it even more. And then eventually, within like just a few months, I quit my job. I contacted this rather well-known street minister back then. I don't know if we're allowed to drop names,
but go ahead.
Brant Russo.
Okay.
I contacted him. And at the time, he was running an organization called Can't Ignore the Poor. And
is he a local guy?
Or? No, he was out of New Orleans.
Okay.
And was more like a kind of traveling street minister. And I contacted him and said that I was interested in joining him in this movement. That I would, you know, like to start traveling with him. And at the time, he had a vegetable oil bus that he drove around the country.
Yeah.
And he wanted to hand it off to me and my friend to use to kind of take Can't Ignore the Poor in our area of the country. So I quit my job. I gave everything away, literally everything I owned except for a backpack full. And at that time I had quite a bit. And I began traveling up and down the East Coast, speaking at different events, raising money for homeless outreach, and taking that money directly myself, buying blankets, buying tents, buying heaters, you know, whatever I could to help.
And so you're in a vegetable oil bus. So does that mean you're stopping at restaurants to say...
Well, the vegetable... I should mention, the vegetable oil bus didn't come to fruition. It ended up that thing was not going to work. So just me and my buddy in an SUV. You know, we traveled around a lot and spoke at these different, you know, fraternal organizations, churches, wherever it would give me a microphone to speak on behalf of the local homeless, wherever I was. I'd spend a couple of days finding out what they needed, and then I'd go to this venue, speak, raise a bunch of money, then distribute the money as I went. That didn't last very long, just maybe... About 6 months I was able to do that, just because it was impossible to afford it, you know, when you're literally giving every dollar you have away, you know, it's hard to keep up with that.
Sure.
So I moved back to Huntington, and I moved into this house that was like we turned it into a punk venue, and we did a lot of outreach from there. We had like an open door Thanksgiving. We had a bunch of shows, bands from all over the country played there. Tyler played there.
Okay. Tyler Childers.
Yeah.
Conversation.
Yes.
Later.
Yeah. I continued to do that, like outreach, was still very much a believer, and
so it was very Christianity driven. When you say outreach, that's one of those words inside the church.
Yeah,
that's second nature to us.
But, yes.
So basically, you're trying to reach people through this punk venue for Jesus, basically.
Essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like, some things personally in my life started going awry. The girl that I was dating at the time, we were on the outs, and then my mother got sick and passed away suddenly at the beginning of 2011, and 3 weeks later, I moved to Lexington to start culinary school.
Okay.
I know that this is, like, basically that's a kind of a bulleted list. Okay. I know that, like, I just told you from 2007 to 2011 in, like, a really quick way, but to explain how much I was in the ministry, I was working with the campus ministers of Marshall University. I was considered a leader in the campus. I had a group of 50 high school kids that I met with every Saturday, and just like helped them distribute across the city doing outreach. I found that the methods that I wanted to do, what I believed what Christ would do in modern day, was not really welcome in most churches.
Okay.
And that being, I wanted to go to the projects in the middle of the night and find hookers or crackheads to talk to. You know, I wanted to do that, like...
Pretty Jesus-y.
Yeah. In my opinion, it was what I thought Christ would do.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to go and help get hookers off the street. I wanted to help crackheads get off crack, you know?
Right.
But when I would bring these things to local churches, because I wasn't a member of really any specific local church. There were a couple that I, you know, went to, but I was very non-denominational, I guess you could say. It scared them a lot, and they backed off me a whole lot.
Yeah.
I started getting to a point where I felt like, this American, modern Christian church is a bunch of talk, no work.
Yeah.
Let's go to Sunday service. Let's make sure we pay our tithe, you know. But when it comes to actually caring about the people outside of our doors, well, we're just going to turn a deaf ear most of the time. Then, like, as I was saying earlier, my mother got sick, died suddenly, and there were just a lot of things in that mix that, like, really made me sour towards the church. You know, my mother was not a believer, and there was a preacher at her funeral speaking on her behalf, you know, saying that she was a believer till the end of her last days, you know, and that wasn't the case.
Yeah.
And I was talking to my girlfriend last night. I was like, how do I explain the moment, like the day that I realized that this was all bullshit?
Yeah.
You know, the day that I realized that the church is lying, the church is all about money, they're all talk, no work, and I can't figure out what turning point in my life. Was it when I moved to Lexington? Was it when my mother died? Was it when I started doing hallucinogen drugs? You know, like, I can't tell you when I decided that it was over for me.
So maybe it was a combination.
It was, it was kind of a culmination of things leading up to this point, okay. You know? It was a lot of seeing just people not living out what the Bible was saying, making it flowery, making it too safe, not realizing, for lack of better words, I just feel like they just wanted to play church and not be church, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things where if you're going to tell someone what to do, if you're going to tell someone how to live their life and say that you have found the thing that's going to give their life direction and purpose, then that better be, that direction and that purpose better be really evident in your life.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm going to hand you a plate of food and say, here, this is food for you, and there's shit all over the plate.
Yeah.
And you still expect me to eat it, I'm not going to do that. And,
yeah.
And so, my experience with church was that, you had to excuse a lot.
Yeah.
So if somebody said, well, God gives you morality, God is the source of morality, and you look at it and say, but yeah, but God did this, and God did this, and God did this, the answer is always, well, he's God, he doesn't have to make sense.
Yeah.
Same way with behavior. Well, Jesus said to do this and do this and do this, and the church's response is, when they don't do that, they say, well, we're all human.
And then I'm sick of that.
Yeah.
I grew sick of that answer.
And it may be true, but it doesn't speak to the truth of Christianity well, is what I always felt.
Yeah.
So let's fill in the gap here a little bit. So you step away from this life of ministry and you go to culinary school. Why culinary school?
Well, I've been working in restaurants since I was... I'm 33 now. I've been working in restaurants since I was 18 or 19, right around that term. So like 13, 14 years now. I had always wanted to be a chef.
Mm-hmm.
From the time I was 6 years old. I was watching the Frugal Gourmet with my mother, cooking with my mother every single day.
That's old school, Frugal Gourmet.
It was kind of a rule. After I got out of school, I'd go play with my friends, but I had to be back by 5:30 to help with dinner. Okay. You know, and I was excited to do that.
Yeah.
It was never like a pain in my ass.
It wasn't a chore.
It wasn't like quit playing touch football. I gotta go help mom. It was no, I'm excited to go help.
Okay.
You know, and with my grandmother as well. They're both Kentucky women. Both very basic, simple cooking. You know, buttermilk biscuits and gravy. You know, chicken and dumplings. Grits, beans.
And so where do you work now?
I work at Deca.
Deca, okay. I was doing an Instagram story, and I said Milkwood. Did you work at Milkwood for a while?
I did. When I first got here, I took a job with Ed Lee Spots, and he was opening a... I got hired on with 610 and Milkwood with the idea that they were going to move me to their third restaurant.
Okay.
Which is... like, this was back in April, May. They tell me that they're going to move me to this third restaurant, but in the meantime, for the summer, they were going to put me at Guy Fieri's restaurant,
which is
the last place I wanted to be on Earth.
Yeah.
You know, so I was like basically did like a seasonal derby like stint with them, and then once they were ready to like cut down their staff and move me to Guy Fieri's, I said, thank you very much.
I
said, let me know when you're ready to cut the staff down, and I'm going to take care of my career from
that,
here.
To me, that's a really surprise. Like, I'm surprised that Ed Lee, I mean, because he, as far as I'm speaking as a food tourist here, but I have a lot of respect for Ed Lee and what he does, and he, you know, he's one of the Mind of a Chef guys.
Yeah.
And for him to have any kind of open hallway to a Guy Fieri restaurant seems really strange to me. They don't seem to do the same thing.
No, I think it was more so, I think it more came into location. He was opening a restaurant next door to Guy's, you know.
So it's just kind of a favor, like.
Yeah, it was more like, hey, you've got people that you need to hold on to until you open this spot, you can put them here.
Gotcha.
I don't know that they have any sort of relation whatsoever.
Okay.
I'll keep my opinions of Edward Lee and Guy Fieri to myself, but
okay. But you didn't want to go make potato skins.
No, and I didn't. You know, dumpster nachos was not my thing. And what the hell is donkey sauce? You know?
So what are you doing at Deca? What kind of food is it?
It's, you know, it's very much a seasonal restaurant. I would say somewhat southern, but we are very vegetable focused.
Okay.
And we are not by any means a vegetarian restaurant. But the way we present our dishes is basically a vessel to present vegetables.
Gotcha.
Seasonally.
So.
We work on a six-season, six-season year,
okay,
where, you know, there's beginning of summer, end of summer.
Okay.
You know, instead of just summer.
Yeah.
You know, we there's beginning of fall, end of fall.
Because harvest is just different.
Yeah, exactly.
On what end of it you're at. Okay.
You know, so we change our menu about six times a year. Oh, actually, you know, exactly six times a year. It's a very, very small staff. I don't have like any sort of position of authority. I'm a line cook, but I feel very much a part of the team.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's a very small team. I mean, the chef owner is Annie Petrie, who was on Top Chef last season of Top Chef, and then her CDC is and sous chef are this engaged couple, Cody and Noel, who have been running the place since the day they opened. Mm-hmm. And actually, they met there. And so, like, I feel very much a part of a family.
Awesome.
You know, it's the two of them who are soon to be married, and then just a few cooks that work for them. And it's really cool. It's like, it's a great experience to be a part of. You know, I'm learning a lot. It was kind of strange for me to go from owning my own catering company and working on my own thing to, like, step back and, you know,
have a boss again.
Yeah. But, you know, I've realized in the last several months of working with them that they're training me and making me more ready of what's to come.
Awesome.
You know?
So is it still like when you were a kid? So when you were a kid, you didn't mind quitting touch football to go cook with mom. Now, whatever you're doing during the day, when it's time to go to work, are you still excited about it?
Yes, absolutely. This industry is kind of a take it home with you type industry, you know, especially when it comes to the stress. And, you know, my girlfriend Rachel and I have been together for 3 years now, and she's seen me in and out of restaurants and, you know, seen me open up my own business, close my own business, do competitions, do the whole shebang. And but through every bit of it, bitch and moan.
Yeah.
You know, and but the one thing that she's reiterated many times is that she's happy to know that when I go to work, I'm going to come home and I'm not going to be bitching about it. It's the like literally the only job I've ever had that I haven't had complaints about.
Well, that, you know, the thing about bliss is some people would listen to the word bliss and say, oh, well, that means you have to be an entrepreneur. But that's not it.
Yeah.
Sometimes following your bliss means you become an entrepreneur like you did for a while. Or part of it, sometimes it means you find a place where you can put your head down and work for somebody. And sometimes it means it's a hobby, which I'm sure there have been times in your life where cooking wasn't your job, but you probably never stopped cooking.
Well, exactly. I mean, I can't remember, not even like in adult years, I can't remember a time where my life wasn't centered around cooking. Even when I was 15, I'd have buddies over and I would be cooking in the kitchen while we all just sat there and played cards, you know, smoked cigarettes or whatever. You know, I got lucky because the craft that I was taught starting at 4 years old is the craft that I've carried and loved and is what's paid my rent and made me happy and made my life fulfilling.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, I toyed around with, you know, like I said, I was studying computer science. I thought, you know, maybe I need to have something that makes me more money. Maybe I need to have something that is, you know, more stable with 401k and benefits, which I don't have any of that,
right?
You know? But I'm happy.
Yeah.
I'm extremely, extremely happy with what I do. And I mean, I don't know how to put it. Cooking has been so second nature to me, you know, that it's yes, it's my career. And yes, it's what I love to do. But whereas for so long, I was like, when I was going to culinary school and I was traveling around cooking these different places, you know, I had this idea that I, you know, really wanted to get into Michelin level cooking.
Yeah.
But really I want to cook and I want to enjoy the food that I'm cooking.
Yeah.
And I want to come home and I want to cook food here and I want to just be in the now and, you know, happy with where I am and at peace with what I'm doing instead of constantly chasing after this, you know, badass chef dream that so many cooks do.
Well, and that almost, not to say this is true of everybody who does that, but to some degree, you kind of, sometimes bliss is just the cooking, like you said, and sometimes it's being famous.
Yeah.
And some people use the cooking to chase being famous
because
that's their bliss.
Yes.
My ex-wife, she was a dancer and a model and an actress, and she wasn't really good at any of those.
Yeah.
But she just wanted to be famous.
Yeah.
She didn't want to take the time to put the work into any of those crafts. She just wanted people to recognize her and wanted to get more hugs. And so I think that's probably some people. But I think there's a real beauty in when you can find the nuts and bolt thing that you put your head down and you do it. And when you're done, you know, the whole thing about bliss is you lose time when you're doing it. you yeah. look up and you're like, oh, holy crap, an hour passed? How did yeah. an hour pass? It sounds like that's what cooking is for you in a lot of ways.
It's more like, how in the hell, where did that last 6 years go?
that too, yeah.
Because, since my mother died in 2011, let me give you a real quick rundown of where I've been.
Okay.
In 2011, after my mother passed, I moved to Lexington.
Which is where I met you, by yes. the way. Yeah.
I moved to Lexington, and 6 months later, my father got sick. I had to move back to Huntington.
Okay.
6 months after that, I moved to Pittsburgh.
Okay.
A few months after that, I moved back to Lexington. I went back to Lexington, finished school, and began working for Andrew Sutter's while I was finishing school at Palmer's. And then, with Andrew and Kyle at Palmer's, we opened that together. Then that all came to a screeching halt. They turned that into a corporate backed restaurant. They let Andrew go illegally while on sick leave, and that pissed me off real bad. Because basically that was like my internship, and once he was let go, that kind of screwed me out of school, and then I had to go. And so, then Kyle, Andrew, and I sat down together, and we came up with the idea of the Gastronomes. Mm-hmm. I moved back to Pittsburgh while Andrew was getting the truck ready. Spent nearly a year in Pittsburgh cooking there, and then he basically called me and said, truck's ready. And I hopped back on a Greyhound, went back to Lexington. Spent about a year with Andrew and Kyle working on the truck. We soon realized that it was a three-man job that paid two people, it was the beginning stages.
Sure.
So, basically I was broke, and I ended up having to move back home.
Okay.
To Huntington, West Virginia. So, and the day that I moved back home, I went on the day after I moved home, I went on my first date with Rachel. I went home with her that night, and I haven't fucking left.
Gotcha.
We've been together for 3 years.
So the one thing through all of that was cooking.
Yes, and the one thing through all of that was cooking. And then we spent a year in Huntington together, and then we moved to Denver and spent a year there, and then we landed here in Louisville back in March.
Gotcha.
And that's how many times I've moved. I tried to count how many roommates I've had since 2006, and I lost count after 2011.
That's funny.
But the one thing that's been in all of that,
yeah.
that has remained steadfast and the cornerstone of my life has been cooking.
Yeah.
It has not been a chase for fame or even a chase for positions of authority.
Or Michelin star.
Yeah, or anything like that.
Entrepreneurship.
Yeah, I mean, I opened my own business because there were no jobs in my hometown.
You're creating a job for yourself.
I have to cook. There are no good restaurants here. It's the only thing I know how to do. So I'm just going to open Fair to Midland, which was my small catering business.
Yeah.
Which came to a screeching halt, when I had an investor buy me a food truck and then take it away from me within a blink of an eye. And basically completely crushed the whole idea, stole my idea, did a lot of really shitty things to me in the midst of it. I spent a few months crying, mm-hmm. But I never fell out of love for cooking.
Didn't hold it against
cooking. Sorry, go ahead.
So let's draw a comparison a little bit. So you started out in kind of a free-form ministry kind of space where you're working with the homeless and you're helping the homeless. And some people would look at that and they would be like, oh, that's awesome. Like, there's a clear, obvious, at the end of the day, here's how you helped.
Yeah.
And so that's the way a lot of people's paradigm kind of works.
Yeah.
And so now you're cooking. And so I would look at that, and this podcast would look at that, and say, that is just as vital. That is just as important.
Yes.
Because at the end of the day, you have, first of all, everybody that you come into contact is coming into contact with a Nick who is happy because he's doing what he was made to do.
Yes.
And the phrase we keep coming back to here is the influence of a vital person vitalizes. Mm-hmm. So everybody who sees you, everybody who meets you, everybody who hears your story is like, oh, okay, well, that's what life can look like when you're really doing what you want to do. Not the traveling around, not the moving, not the stuff that may have hurt, but the happiness, the thing that you have something through all of that that sustained you, which was cooking.
Yeah.
And so also, you, every night, you get, how many people come into that restaurant that you get to make happy?
Yeah.
Because what makes you happier than a good meal and mm-hmm. being nourished by that? And so I there wasn't really a question attached to this as much as me just...
Well, I can build off of that. Yeah, okay, to kind of tie it all together. After leaving the church, after quitting doing those things, and slowly becoming an atheist.
Okay.
In the last year, being a rather vocal atheist and speaking out against the church.
Yeah.
Not just in the last year, but for the past several years, I've received a lot of negative feedback. I don't know if you consider it negative feedback, but comments saying, you know, what happened to you?
Yeah.
You used to be passionate.
Yeah.
You used to care so much about people. What happened? Well, what the fuck do you mean, what happened? Like, I don't care about people, but I'm cooking dinner that I can't afford?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think that I am still a servant. You know, I'm still the hired help. I still love what I do. I still humbly cook for people that I don't even get to see every single night. You know, I still do my best to be kind to people, you know, even when it's difficult. I get really, really perturbed when the comments come up and people are like, well, you know, I just wish you'd come back to church. You know, just imagine what you could be doing if you were back in church, you know. Just imagine the success you could have if you were, well, that sounds really cult-like.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to make me famous. You know, like, what?
Right.
You know, there was like, I don't even know if that really ties it together, but like.
Well, it's, you know, there's the old saying that when you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of how the church operates. So there's one way to help the world. There's one way to help people. And I don't think you or I, either one, would say homeless ministries are bad. They're obviously not bad. They're great. They're doing great work. And I'm sure even since your time, you've had opportunities to help the homeless and probably have. And
yes.
Excuse me. But finding your bliss means putting down the hammer and finding the tool that fits your hand perfect.
Yeah.
And using that to try and make the world a better place.
Mm-hmm.
And so it feels to me like that's what cooking has become for you. That is the tool that fits your hand.
I think it was the tool that was on the back of my bench all along.
Yeah, that you never thought to pick up for a while.
Yeah, well, it's...
Well, that's not true. You picked it up since you were a little kid.
Yeah, but when I've... It's just... It became inevitable.
Yeah.
Like, it's been my ticket, you know? It's what's made life exciting in the sense that, like, I have moved around a lot, and I've never had difficulty getting a job.
Yeah.
You know, kitchens always need help, mm-hmm. you know? So I've seen a lot of really cool places and met a lot of really cool people through this. I don't know, it's become my own church, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the culture surrounding food has, become my community. It's as big as it is small.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, there are millions of restaurants, it seems like, but things are the same, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what I love about it. Like, I can fit in, you know, I can be of help.
You found your place.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
I'm gonna ask you three questions here. This will close on this. I want to use this podcast to give advice to people who are looking for a way into something. So if there's somebody out there who's listening to this who thinks, man, I've always wanted to cook. So mm-hmm. I've got three questions around that. First one is, what preconception do you need to let go of before you walk into a kitchen? What is not going to be of any use to you in there?
Your ego.
Okay.
A lot of kitchens will say no egos allowed. You know, you're a part of a team. You're a cog in the machine. You know, you're a gear, and the preconceived notion is, let go of the glamour that you see on television. Mm-hmm. turn the damn timer off that's on every show.
Right.
Just know that it's nothing like what you're going to think it is. It's nothing what television makes it out to be. It's nothing what any sort of news, like, you know, thing you see on your news feed, videos of cooking. It's none of that, mm-hmm. you know? It's y'all... Let go of, I don't know, like, it's a really hard question.
That's good, because sort of it's preconceived notions of that, because food is a big television thing right now.
Yeah.
Cooks are a big television thing right now.
Yeah.
So letting go of that. So same kind of area as far as personality traits and stuff. What do you need to put in your pocket before you walk into a kitchen? What do you need to make sure you have with you attitude-wise?
That you're ready to be a part of a team. That you're, like, fall in love with the dish pit and learn how to use a knife. Okay. Those are two of the most important things. It's like
wash dishes and
yeah, be okay that when the, you know, the stoner dish pit guy doesn't show up, that you've got to be in the dish pit for 3 hours. Okay. You know, or if you really want to get into this scene, start at the dish pit, but buy a knife and okay. you know, keep it with you.
Be ready
when chef comes in and says, "Can you chop this garlic for me?"
Yeah,
you know, and that's where it starts. Like, okay. you know, if you can be utilizable in different facets, like, you know, can you wash dishes, keep your face that wall for 6 hours and wash dishes, yeah. but can you be ready
to be as useful as you can?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Just be ready.
Okay. So last one. So somebody, and you kind of answered this a little bit in this last one, but hopefully there's more here, is so somebody wants to get started in the kitchen, or they know cooking is their passion. What's the first step? What do they need to do first?
Ask.
Okay.
Show up.
Okay.
And ask. I think that's more than just cooking.
Okay.
Like, when it comes to following your bliss, if I can give any advice, it's to show up and ask for it, and then ask for more, and ask for more, and say thank you, and ask for more, and say thank you, and ask for more.
Okay.
And then just see what happens. I truly believe in the power of asking.
Show up.
Show up and ask.
Okay.
You know, like, every great job I've been given is because I knocked on the back door and I had my resume in hand, and I humbly asked, "Hey, can I get a tryout?" Awesome. And they'd be like, "Yeah, when do you want to try out?" And then I would say, "Tonight, if that's okay, because I really need to get a job." Yeah. You know, but I think there's such the thing that I hate about the cooking industry is how intimidating it can be to people. Mm-hmm. How the Food Network has taken it from the joy of cooking to they've put a timer on everything.
Yeah, it's a competition.
Yeah, everything's a competition. And, you know, the goal of the Food Network is only to get you to watch more television.
Yeah.
That's their goal. Right. They're not trying to teach you to cook.
Right.
They're trying to get you to watch more TV.
To watch somebody else cook.
You know, and so, like, it's so important to just, like, cook for yourself and the people that you love.
Whether or not you have Rachel Ray's custom spatula.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
yeah. And a saucepan and a knife is where to start. And also learn how to cook a fucking egg properly.
I agree with that.
I hope this goes viral. Crunchy eggs are disgusting.
So do you eat... Do you eat scrambled eggs?
I'll eat all forms of eggs.
So for me, scrambled eggs, they got to be wet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely.
If they get too dry or too gummy, don't want it.
Yeah, no, not at all. Or like when people put bacon in their scrambled eggs, it just dries them out.
If you just eat an egg by itself and you cook it right, one of the best things in the world. A little bit of salt and you're fine.
Yep. So, 100%.
I'm in love with the egg cooked properly.
But when it comes to bliss, I believe that I am blissed out. I'm happy.
Okay.
I am genuinely excited to do what I do. I don't care what comes next. I am excited to clock in at work at 3 o'clock today and then come home after a night of cooking to my girlfriend and my dog. And that's what makes me happy.
So your tank is full.
I'm happy, and whatever comes next comes. But right now, this is it. And I think a big part of bliss for people is searching, and it's, I think what's most important is just to be happy and find the happiness in what you're doing now. Yeah. You know, and I know that's so cliche to live in the moment, but it's so important.
Yeah, no, it's when you talk about living in the moment and being happy in that, you kind of feel like somebody should be playing the national anthem behind you.
Yeah.
It gets so cheesy, but it's true. It gets said over and over again because it's true.
Yeah.
If you can find that happiness in the moment in what you're doing, that may be the best you can ever hope for.
Yeah.
Like that's, you know, because it's Jim Carrey talks about, he wishes everybody in the world could get all the money and fame they wanted so that they could see that's not it.
Yeah.
Like you are not going to be happy with that. It's when you find those moments of happiness with yourself and your that moment that's what it's about.
And also with the whole thing of like, if you want to start cooking, like one of the most annoying things in my career that I've seen is people taking like positions of authority too soon, and they stop learning.
Yeah.
You know, for instance, like when you're talking about fame and riches, like, you know, I thought when I opened up my own thing in West Virginia, it was new. Nobody had ever seen anything like it before.
You were hot shit.
I was hot shit.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know what? I wasn't learning anything, you know? And I had to fake being happy for the newspaper. And I had to fake being happy for my friends. But I wasn't.
Yeah.
You know, I was excited, but I wasn't happy. You know, I was scared. I wasn't happy.
Yeah.
You know, because, like, so many cooks I know, you know, once they're given a sous chef position, that's smacked on their resume, and they're now a sous chef.
They're done.
And they're gonna, that's only up the ladder, up the ladder, yeah. up the ladder. But it's like, I would be happy to be a line cook till I fall over than take a position where I'm not learning anymore.
I know you're a comic guy. Did you ever read Transmetropolitan by Warren Ellis?
No, I haven't.
It's a big political book.
Yeah.
But in the first trade of it, he talks about how the worst thing in the world is when somebody gets a little bit of authority.
Yeah.
What it does to you, because it ultimately turns you into a monster if you're not ready for it.
Yeah.
Because you start believing that what you have to say is the law.
Yeah.
And so that sounds like kind of what you're saying, that you all of a sudden you're like, well, what I knew got me this far, so I must know quite a bit.
Yeah.
And you stop learning. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I remind myself of a quote from Marco Pierre White, who's, you know, when it comes to celebrity chefs, he's my favorite. And because, you know, Anthony Bourdain trained under him, Mario Batali trained under him, Gordon Ramsay trained under him, you know, he's the best and you know, he received 3 Michelin stars, the first English chef to receive 3 Michelin stars, the youngest person to receive 3 Michelin stars, very, very successful. But towards the end of his cooking career, he gave back his 3 Michelin stars because he wanted to stop being judged. But in his fame, in his the like one of the peaks of his career, he explained that he wears the blue apron with the rest of his cooks because they're all learning. They're all students.
Gotcha.
And I think that that's something extremely important in all crafts, is to stop. People need to stop looking at themselves as the leader so much and maybe step back and learn more.
Yeah.
You know, Rachel, my girlfriend, has seen me just basically burn a bridge and walk away if I'm not learning.
Yeah.
If as soon as I'm not learning, I don't want to be a part of it.
Yeah.
You know? And it's not to say you can't teach me anything. I know all of this.
Right.
But
some places it's obvious.
Yeah. Or if I'm not being utilized or challenged, I can't stay.
Okay.
You know? It's not that I'm leaving because there's obviously no place of authority for me. You're not challenging me. My brain isn't, you know, turned on by this, you know, by the work that you're giving me. I don't feel like I'm learning anything. So I go, you know?
Yeah. Well, would that we could all get to that place. Nick, man, this has been incredible.
Thank you
so much for letting us come.
I'm excited.
I woke you up early to do this, and I really appreciate
it. I needed
you
to be up early, so.
All right, man. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, bye.
So that was my interview with Nick Taylor. There were a couple of things I really took away from that conversation. One is Nick has been a business owner. He's been a chef that was kind of in charge of his own thing. And he's been a line cook. So he's kind of been at every position on that spectrum of leadership. And the thing that he liked most wasn't being in charge, wasn't being his own boss, but was being a cook, because cooking is the thing that drives him. It's his passion. It's his bliss. And so as long as he had somewhere where he could go and cook, then he was happy. And I really respect that. I think that's what finding your bliss is all about, is finding that thing that that gives you life, and figuring out how to do it at all cost. The other thing was he talked about was, you know, I had a friend who wrote a song to be a part of a web series for me. And one of the lyrics in the song was, "I love you, so I'll cook." And I cook for my family every night. I'm the dinner cooker. And I always think about that, that cooking is a way of showing people that you love them. And Nick, by being a cook in a restaurant, he even mentioned, he said, I'm cooking for people that I'll never see. I'll never get to watch them eat. I'll never get to sit across from them while they eat. But I'm cooking for them just the same. And I really am seeing that as an act of love. And we've all had those meals where it was clear the guy who cooked it did not love being there, was not trying to show us any love or respect or imagination by the effort he put in the meal. But then we've also had those meals where it was clear the person who cooked it, that we may have never seen, we may have no interaction with ever, put themselves into that meal and put love into that meal. And that also is what bliss is all about. And so whatever you do, whatever it is, whether you're a cook, whether you're a musician, whether you're a guy with a podcast, whether you're a graphic designer, whether you're a street sweeper, whatever it is, I hope that you can find a way to put yourself and your love into your thing. And if you can't, then stop making it your thing. Find the thing that really is your thing and chase it. Anyway, thanks for listening. New episodes every week. We've got some cool ones lined up. We've got some ideas about the future and some things we're going to do. So thank you guys for being a part of it. And we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.